Welcome to season 5 of the Willing Equine podcast, the podcast all about creating positive relationships between horses and people. I'm your host, Adele Shaw, a certified equine behavior consultant, horsemanship mentor, and all-around horse lover.
Okay, we're on part 4 of this series where I am answering doubts and questions about what can and can't be trained with positive reinforcement. We probably have one more part to this because I'm going to be able to answer a few things today in this episode, and then I've got a couple more here. We'll take a break for a little while from this, and then we'll jump back in with answering or talking about some of the reasons that you guys shared with me about being hesitant to start with positive reinforcement or what was holding you back. So that's going to be our next series that we're going to dive into. But for today, we are talking about what can't be trained with positive reinforcement. And today's episode is going to be all about social bonding, relaxation, and releasing tension. So we're going to have kind of a collection of some different questions and concerns that I received. So the first one was talking about social bonding time. So no expectation time, horses willingly spending time with humans outside of training sessions, and how this can't be trained with positive reinforcement. And so it's a yes and a no to this. With positive reinforcement, one of the superpowers of using positive reinforcement is that we are organically, unintentionally, or intentionally using or incorporating classical conditioning and creating positive associations with the interactions with people when we're using positive reinforcement, because food is involved, food is fun, food is pleasant, and it is very reinforcing, especially if we're doing it right. And so since the human becomes associated with the arrival of something appetitive, something pleasant, something enjoyable throughout the training sessions, and training sessions become associated with this, we can actually create really good, strong connections, just neuro connections, with the arrival of people, with the presence of people, with training itself, with socializing with people, all of that. And we can create really strong trust bank accounts, learning histories, associations, all of that with the use of positive reinforcement, which then in turn can develop and create a strong foundation for a relationship and can help with that social bonding. Is it the entire picture? Probably not, but it is a big part of it. And when we look at horses out in the herd, when we look at herd interactions, horse to horse interactions, they are heavily appetitive. They are heavily focused on shared resources, shared comforts, shared appetitive things, shared pleasant interactions, shared everything. And actually, when we look at human to human interactions, this is also the case. When you think of spending time with your friends, spending time with your family, what makes it a good experience, and what is often heavily incorporated into almost all human social interactions? Food. You think about going to Thanksgiving dinner. Thanksgiving, of course, there's a huge, you know, food, right? We go to birthday parties, there's cake, there's appetizers, or even meals that are served, maybe sometimes pizza, maybe it's just little vegetable trays and fruit trays for the kids and all of that. There's always food involved. We think about going out with our friends, then we might be going and getting some wine or some drinks. So that's a type of food, right? And, or just a resource. We think about going to a company event even, and oftentimes they will serve snacks, they'll serve donuts or whatever it is. So there's always food involved. We think about, going out to breakfast with family. We think about like, hey, I haven't caught up with this friend in a really long time. You want to meet for coffee? Do you want to meet for breakfast? Food is heavily involved in almost all of our human to human social interactions because it's a shared resource and we bond over food. And horses do the same thing. They may not actually like invite each other to go out for coffee, but what they do is as a unit, as a herd, they move from resource to resource together and they guide each other to resources. And even from a very young age, one of the major roles of the dam is to show the foal how to access resources. So when foals are weaned too young, sometimes they really struggle with, or if they never got an opportunity for the dam to show the foal this, like this actually happened with one of my horses. She would never learn how to eat hard food. So like grains and, or ration balancers, or even like hay pellets, things like that. And even she struggled with hay and, even alfalfa, because the only thing she was used to was either nursing or grass. And so when I got her, I tried to, you know, introduce her to things, and it took some time, and actually took her observing the other horses and learning from them. And she started to pick up on eating these other food types. So the moms will show the foals how to eat and how to access resources and where to get the water from and where to get the food from and what food is good and what is not. Not all of it is reliant on that. A lot of it is instinctual, but a lot of it is, and I think more than we realize. And they learn what's safe, what's not. They learn how to find water. They learn, you know, how to find shelter, how to find safety, how to stay with the herd. This is all shared resources. Then we look at herds, whether domestic horses that are able to live in a very species appropriate lifestyle. We'll watch them. And I actually watch my own horses do this, where they'll both be, you know, at one part of the pasture eating their hay, because I have my hay very far away from the water to allow for more movement. And then I have my shelter on the other side. So they do a lot of movement back and forth from their resources. So I'll notice that one horse will start to come up to get water because they're thirsty. So they have that inclination of like, okay, I'm really thirsty, I'm going to go get water. The other horse will follow. Then they'll stand there at the water trough for a little bit. And then one of them will be like, you know what? I'm done with the food and the water. I really want some shelter away from the bugs and the sun. So they will start to wander off to the shelter, and the other horse will follow. And these are different horses. There's not a stagnant leader. There's not one that's always leading the herd. They will go together to find resources, and they will follow each other for that. And they will help guide each other to where the resources are. And if you've ever introduced a new horse to your herd, you may also see a really clear example of this, where the herd will show, maybe not even like intentionally, they're not trying to be like, okay, here, new horse, you know, find this resource. May not be quite like that. But by the new horse understanding that if they follow the other horses, they will find access to resources. And so they'll follow the rest of the herd to the grass, to the shelter, to the water. And so they can learn through observation that way. So horses do bond and do develop relationships, and it's an important part of the structure of the herd that they operate together as a unit, and they share resources and they guide each other to resources. And I do believe that it conditions, you know, these positive associations with their herd mates. It brings safety, it brings security, it brings good pleasant interactions. And so we can replicate this with using positive reinforcement, as well as feeding time and providing hay and grooming. And oh, I even forgot to talk about, you know, co-grooming and grooming each other in a herd. That's appetitive. That's positive. It could be positive reinforcement. We can use that in our training sessions or just outside of the training session. We can develop relationships that way. It brings in that classical conditioning if the horse enjoys grooming. So we can absolutely use positive reinforcement to help support and encourage and develop healthy, strong relationships and social bonding with our horses. Is it the only aspect? No, but it is a big part of, I think, most relationships and healthy, good, strong relationships.
Okay, so what about relaxation and also releasing tension? Like lowering the head, relaxed walking, not being really tense and anxious. Both of these are also possible with positive reinforcement. One thing that I think is important to address here is that a lot of people are experiencing and or exposed to in some capacity that horses that are trained around food or with food are horses that are over anxious, basically, is what I want to say. The horses are amped up. They want to do all the things. They're throwing behaviors, meaning that they're just one behavior after another. They're just like, does this get the click? 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 And so they're frantic and they're anxious. And this is not good positive reinforcement training. It just isn't clicker training. It's just not good training. this is indicative of an underlying problem, that the horse is dealing with quite a bit of food anxiety or even just anxiousness and anxiety around the training itself. Maybe the training isn't clear. Maybe there's a lack of cue clarity and consistency and predictability. The access to the reinforcer is very either restricted or unpredictable or inconsistent. It's going to create a lot of tension in your horse. If you're experiencing this level of tension in your horse, or you have seen this type of training or this type of tension demonstrated in the examples that you've seen, please note that this is not what we ultimately are working for. This is not a ideal example of the results that you are, that are able to be achieved with positive reinforcement. This is not a reflection of all positive reinforcement focused training or clicker training. So when working with clients and my own horses, there is an underlying or just a, actually it's not even underlying, it is a straightforward focus on relaxation comes first. And that comes from clarity, consistency, predictability, and also addressing the horse's underlying feelings about food. So we could say that a horse that's really anxious around food just has really strong feelings around food, and they are just emotionally really struggling because the humans got the food, they don't know how to get it. Ah, right? And we don't want that to be brought into the training sessions. And a big part of that is about addressing the lifestyle, addressing how the horse feels about food from that perspective, their diet, how they're being fed, what are they being fed, what is their history with being fed, how can we help them? There's a lot of aspects that go into this and how to help horses through this. And then we go into looking at it during the specific training session. So within the training session, the scope of that, what can we do to help alleviate a lot of this tension? Sometimes this means that we're training with just loose hay, like not even pellets, because pellets make them, you know, kind of anxious because that is a restricted resource. Most horses, for safety reasons, do not have 24/7 access to just dry pellets all the time. That is a higher risk of choke, it's a higher risk of, you know, other issues, and also they're probably, it's just not the best for their teeth, et cetera. So it is a restricted resource. They do not have access to it all the time. And so they can get more excited about that type of resource. So we might need to use something that they have access to 24/7, which is just some loose hay or the grass that they're grazing, whatever it is, whatever we can do to help alleviate a lot of that anxiousness and tension around food is going to help here. Then some of it is mechanical or just about the specifics of the training itself. It is very common as you're learning a new way of training for there to be errors, and that's fine. And it's part of the learning curve. It just is what it is. I mean, that's how it was for me too. I created on accident a lot of tension in my horses through making mistakes with my own training mechanics, with my own understanding of establishing cues, with mixing appetitives and aversives. So accidentally using pressure when I was trying to use, you know, positive reinforcement. So I was using negative reinforcement or doing the negative reinforcement with the cherry on top. So adding food after applying the pressure, that can create a lot of tension because now your horse is stuck between, you know, do I seek something out or do I try and avoid something? And we get a lot of conflict going on there. There can also be health conditions that are contributing. So one of my horses, she has an underlying muscular condition that when she's a little bit more symptomatic, her muscles are a little bit more painful. And if I'm working on a behavior that requires movement, I've created conflict, right? Because she's trying to avoid an aversive, which is movement, but yet to get the resource, she needs to move. So, and we can see this show up in negative reinforcement, pressure and release training too. You know, the horse doesn't want to move and then we put the pressure on because we want them to move. And then they only get the release when they move. Same conflict problem. So underlying health conditions, underlying causes for behavior need to be addressed, and the horse needs to be helped through these before we're looking at it from a training perspective. But then when it comes to the training itself, we need to be very, very careful that we're not creating confusion and conflict. When we can address all of this, and my recommendation is going to be to work with a professional. And this is not even an advertisement for my own coaching. You can work with any really qualified professional in positive reinforcement and clicker training. I would make sure to do your homework. I would watch their training sessions. I would see, are the horses that they're working with appear to be relaxed and comfortable and totally at ease with the training session? Are we seeing a lot of tension? Are we seeing conflict? Do your homework and really research and make sure that the person that you choose to trust and work with is capable of taking you down the path that you're looking for with your horse. So my recommendation is definitely going to be that. Additionally, we can specifically shape behaviors with the intention of building relaxation and building calmness and building a sense of peace and all of that into the behavior itself. This comes from good shaping plans. It comes from having our approximations well laid out and not lumping criteria. It comes from having a clear understanding of what we want this behavior to look like. It comes from being able to identify early flags, red flags that we need to address. You know, maybe things are going well, but then all of a sudden at some level in training this behavior, you're starting to see some tension creep into the eye. Like we're starting to see some triangulation, or maybe the ears are showing more conflict, or maybe there's some tension in the nostrils. Okay, we need to stop. We need to address. We need to evaluate. Is this from the training? Is this from something else? And we need to be constantly evaluating this and constantly applying this knowledge into the training sessions. We can also specifically mark for and click for times where we're seeing a softness in, you know, how the horse is moving, when we're seeing that maybe they're not bracing. Now, I want to say this. I'm not a big believer in marking for ears forward kind of thing. Like shape, you can't train emotion, but what you can do is create a conditioned emotional response to the training. So we can build in a sense of calmness. We can build in a sense of enjoyment and joy. We can build in a sense of relaxation, a sense of just feeling good and well and enjoying this process from the very beginning. What we don't want to do is, you know, be training the behavior and then all of a sudden we realize there's some tension in our horses, whatever. And then so we withhold the click until we see the face soften or the ears forward. We don't want to do that because we can actually create more frustration. And also in some cases, not all, but in some, you can just mark for and shape certain behaviors like ears forward. You can train a horse to put their ears forward, but that doesn't mean that it's actually changed their emotional association of what's going on, their emotional state. It hasn't changed that. You didn't train an emotional state. So we need to go back and get them to a place of calm and then build from there. So absolutely positive reinforcement is effective in training relaxation and calmness into all things. I'm actually working with quite a few horses right now where we're working on postural things and making sure that I am, from the very beginning, we're starting at just a walk in a straight line. And we're starting with just one step of standing in good posture with a no bracing. They're nice and relaxed and calm. We're just using some loose hay or some low value hay pellets. And I'm just standing there with them. And then I ask them for just one step in that state of mind and in that posture, and then click and feed. And we're going to build from there. And eventually this is going to get to, and I've already been achieving this successfully with quite a few horses, and I have for a while now, you know, walking for longer distance in that state of mind and that emotional state, and also in that physical state, and then going into trotting and then cantering and also in circles, and then going over cavalettis and then going over jumps, and then even into lateral work and more complex training. So absolutely, with positive reinforcement, it is possible. You just have to know what you're looking for, and also probably need coaching. And you also need to be aware of that the training itself is not the only factor involved in this whole process. In fact, you have to have that foundation of your horse's needs being met and them being in a good state of mind and a good place physically for any training to be successful, whether it's negative reinforcement based, suppression release, or positive reinforcement based, or clicker training. So that is going to be really important in being able to shape that relaxation and in releasing tension as the question was. You can also train specific behaviors that you feel will help your horse release tension that they're holding in certain parts of their body. So let's say you want to teach the horse to drop their pole and release the tension that they're holding in their back and in their neck. You can put this behavior on cue and make sure, though, that when you're shaping this behavior, it is being shaped in a way that is in approximations towards doing it in a relaxed way. Because a horse can just drop their head, right? That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for lowering the head in a certain way that it releases certain muscles and creates good posture and helps them feel good. And we're starting it from a place of where they can be successful in a good state of mind with a good emotional state. And then we're going to bring that throughout the whole process. Thanks so much for listening. If you have any questions, please do email me at info@thewillingequine.com. If you'd like more information on my courses, coaching, consulting, or even access to free resources, please do check out my website, thewillingequine.com. If you like this podcast or this episode, please do leave feedback on the platform that you listen to it on.